It's Sam Cedar launching an illegal invasion and occupation of your brain.
Hello, folks. This episode of the Majority Report is brought to you by Ting.com. Ting gives you big savings and billing clarity for mobile phone service. Try their online savings calculator right now and save $50 on your device purchase at MajorityReport.ting.com.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS.
And Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Thursday, October 4th, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, talking with a dual mandate. First, about keeping us updated on the Republican attempts of voter suppression throughout the country and the recent victories for those, well, the right of people to vote. And, of course, to give us briefly a little talk about the debate last night. Ari Berman from The Nation magazine, author of Herding Donkeys. Also on the program today, in light of the debate, I don't know, the most instructive thing for me from the debate last night was how narrow the playing field is when we're talking about the economy. It's really just, should we have austerity? Or should we have austerity? Also on the program today, J.P. Morgan sued. Did we get to that Noam Chomsky? We did, right? Good. Horrible story about rape conviction that's been overturned. I think it's in Pennsylvania. And Paul Ryan disputing the fact that 47% of the country are teeth suckers. It's only 30%, apparently, now. 30% of you do not believe in the American dream. You're all, I don't know what we would call you. A little bit of house cleaning. Actually, I get a lot of bit of house cleaning. Oh, and dig into... nice smackdown that Chris Hayes had with Rudy Giuliani. Did you know that he never got a single contract from the Department of Homeland Security in any capacity, in any company that he was in? I find that hard to believe. I find that very hard to believe. Some house cleaning tonight at 9:30 p.m. Eastern. I will be having a debate with... a guy, I mean, it's like one of these polypop YouTube debates. And, you know, folks in this business, you gotta spread the word. I'm having a debate with a guy named Drinking with Bob. I think he's from Massachusetts. I get the sense he's from Massachusetts. He had some very strange, I don't know if they're that strange, rants on YouTube. And I suspect it'll be... an interesting debate. I don't know. He strikes me as like one of those 9/11 conservatives. You know what I mean? Is that accurate? Okay. So you can check that out tonight at 9:30 p.m. Eastern. Also, got an email from a listener who wants to incentivize people to go to the opening of Eugene Jaracki's movie this weekend. That, of course, is The House I Live In. Pardon? We had him on this past, I think it was on Monday. And this weekend in New York City, tomorrow night, the show opens at the Angelica Film Center, at Lincoln Plaza Cinemas. Well, basically those two places in New York City. One's down on Houston Street. One is at Broadway. If you attend, take a picture or of your ticket or just be honest and say that you went. And this listener will sponsor trial memberships, 1 month long trial memberships to the first five people who send a ticket stub in from this weekend. So it'll be a ticket stub situation. Take a picture. You don't have to actually mail it in. Take a picture and email us at majorityreporters@gmail.com and go see this movie. It's important. Bring a couple of friends. If you're already a member, bring a friend. And they'll get a free month trial, or you'll get, I guess, maybe we'll give you a 1 month rebate. How's that? We'll broaden it out for you. So that's a late breaking sponsor. We're going to be talking more about the debate in just a moment, but the most interesting thing was, and I don't know if this has been resolved yet, but apparently that flash poll that came out after CNN, did you read this? CNN had a poll that showed that President Obama got whooped, and he did. It was a bad debate, but it was an astonishing number. It was something like 67% to 22% said that Romney won. Apparently, the sample included virtually only people who were over the age of 50 and only white and only from the South. Seems to be a rather narrow sample.
Which sounds just like Frank Luntz's Fox News panel last night.
Yeah. Now, I will say that there's no doubt, and we're going to we'll talk about it, and I imagine Cliff tomorrow is going to have a couple of things to say about that. But we'll talk more about it with Ari Berman. I just thought that was an interesting thing to point out. I'm excited to hear your phone calls later in the program at 646-257-3920. All right, we're going to go to Ari Berman. We'll be right back after this. This episode of the Majority Report is brought to you by Ting. Ting is a new mobile phone service that makes total sense for once. It's all about bringing clarity to the billing process, to usability, and big savings for mobile phone users. Ting is a simple plan with honest, fair pricing that bills megabytes, minutes, and text messages separately. Ting means big savings, and they've got great support. The whole company's run by geeks. No wait, customer support is available 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Email support is also great. They got forums. The support folks are smart. They're passionate. They're empowered to solve problems. You can visit Ting today. Check out majorityreport.ting.com. Check out their savings calculator. You get $50 off if you buy one of their devices. Ting Mobile. It just makes sense. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone. It is always a pleasure to welcome to this program writer for The Nation magazine, author of Herding Donkeys. I don't know what else to say. I mean, man about
all
town.
Around bon vivant, I'd say.
Bon vivant. Ari Berman. Ari Bon Vivantman. It's one of those days, Ari. So what do you want to do? You want to start off with the voter
suppression?
Let's
just get the debate out of the way and then move on to some substance.
So tell me, Ari, who won?
Sam, can you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Who won?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious who won, which is for a rarity, Mitt Romney won. Indeed. And I think Mitt Romney didn't win so much as Obama lost.
I would agree with
and
that assessment as well.
I know we were conversing about this through different formats of communication, and we basically came to the conclusion that as football fans, which I know the president is as well, that people who follow football know that prevent defense never works. That if you have a lead and you suddenly become passive and you allow your opponent to make up ground, they're going to take that opportunity and they're going to move the ball downfield. And I think that's unfortunately what the president allowed Romney to do. I think the president could have been a lot more aggressive on Romney. He chose not to be, and when he tried to be more aggressive, he didn't really hit very succinctly. So I think it was a wake-up call for Obama's team that they need to alter their strategy. They need to be a lot more aggressive in debunking Romney. David Axelrod said something to the effect of, well, Obama didn't want to be a serial fact-checker. Well, I'm sorry, if Romney's going to lie left and right, then Obama has to be the fact-checker, because Jim Lehrer certainly wasn't going to step up and do it. And so I do think it's incumbent on the president to not only get his message across, but to aggressively fact-check Romney if that's what needs to happen.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I think, a lame attempt to spin it. And I appreciate you're using the football metaphor and this platform to sort of butch up your personal brand with the football analogy. I think the Axelrod was, yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if that's what President Obama said after the debate. Like, I got to be a serial, you know, I got to be factcheck.org up there. He seemed to be completely thrown off by the fact that Mitt Romney would lie. And, you know, one would think at this point that there would be some awareness in that White House of these things, just on a tactical level. I mean, I have some problems with some of the substance, frankly, that President Obama did bring, but he clearly was going in with a prevent defense, as you call it, mentality. But then I think he didn't even execute that well. And
it was a poor debate on every single level, Sam. Yeah. I mean, I think it was a poor debate tactically. I think it was a poor debate strategically. And I think it was a poor debate substantively for the president. He got back into the mode of Obama that I think both of us like the least, which is the Simpson Bowles conciliatory common ground with Republicans Obama. That Obama did not work. That strategy did not work. It was repudiated when Republicans refused to work with the president. It was repudiated when the president didn't get anything done, and it was repudiated when he stumbled throughout all of 2011. People like the aggressive Obama a lot better. They like the Obama who's out there fighting for jobs. They like the Obama who's out there pledging to save, not destroy, the social safety net. They like the Obama who will release his tax returns, who doesn't say that 47% of Americans are dependent on the government, who didn't work for 20 years at Bain Capital. That's why they like Obama better than Romney. And we didn't see that Obama last night, and we didn't see that Mitt Romney last night either. And so that's what was so frustrating about the debate to me.
And he did a horrible job of sort of tying in, I mean, just on so many fronts. He never mentioned the Jobs Act that he proposed. He really basically just brought all the bad things you would want, sort of bragging about the austerity that they've already implemented, saying that he and Mitt Romney have the same position on Social Security. Now, I want to know what tweak means. You know what I mean? You know, President Obama said, well, yeah, we will want to tweak it. I want to know what tweak means. This is, you know, what's stunning to me, and Jim Lehrer, man, somebody wheel this guy off at this point. I mean,
well, Jim, I think Obama took the bait from Jim Lehrer, who was basically fronting for Pete Peterson, the billionaire who's been crusading about so-called entitlements for 3 decades now. And I think Obama decided to get all wonky and austerity light. What Obama should have said very simply is, I want to protect Social Security. Romney wants to destroy it. I want to protect Medicare. Romney wants to destroy it. I want to protect Medicaid. Romney wants to destroy it. And Romney has put someone on his ticket, Paul Ryan, who has given the GOP the intellectual case for privatizing Social Security and privatizing Medicare. This isn't some abstraction. This is actually what Paul Ryan wants to do, and we have no reason to believe that it's also not what Mitt Romney wants to do as well. And so I think Obama tried to make some of these points, not on Social Security, but on Medicare and Medicaid. But he should have been more aggressive on Social Security, and he should have been a lot clearer, I thought, and more straightforward when it comes to Medicare and Medicaid. And now that's going to either fall on Joe Biden in the vice presidential debate, or it's going to fall on the president to make the case a lot more clearly in the other two presidential debates.
Yeah. And I think, you know, they're going to have to realize, like, oh, we're going to actually have to do – I mean, we're going to have to actually do some debate prep, and we got to come – I mean, I found last night just completely befuddling. And I was annoyed because I tried to get my daughter to go to bed on time for this thing, and I had other things to do. And I feel
you're a man of many talents, Sam. I mean, you can't just be watching a debate. I mean, you need to be doing a lot of
punditizing. Even nothing to tweet going on. I mean, from the very beginning.
But here's what I think is really inconsistent, Sam. Obama can't be running ads about Mitt Romney and the 47% and Bain Capital and Mitt Romney not releasing his tax returns, and then decide that he's not going to mention those issues in the debate simply because his campaign has it covered. That's not how it works. I mean, 50 to 60 million people are turning into these debates. It's a much better venue for making the argument than it is in just putting up a TV ad that someone may or may not watch. So this idea that Obama can just sort of give the dirty work out to his campaign and then remain above the fray, I think, is really kind of a mistaken read of American politics. And he should have expected Romney to lie left and right, because that's what Romney did in 20-plus presidential debates. He should have expected Romney to feign outrage, because that's what he did in every single presidential debate. And I was just surprised that the Obama we saw in last night's debate was largely the Obama we saw when he first started debating Hillary Clinton, who just kind of seemed disengaged from the process. I personally don't think it's going to matter that much. I think you look at what Nate Silver of the New York Times just wrote, which is that these debates rarely move the polls that much, and Romney, in any case, is too far behind for it to really matter. But I do think Obama's going to have to be better in the next two debates, or else this race could get a lot closer.
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, this this is, you know, sort of the gift from heaven from all the corporate media people, because it allows them to continue this sort of idea that this is going to be a race, et cetera, et cetera. My hope is that this diverts some money away from the Senate and House races. You know, I mean, I hope, honestly, like, that was the one thing I walked away with. I was like, good, because, you know, we're hearing all these reports of all this money going away from the Senate and House, I mean, from Romney going to the Senate and House races. I hope Romney gets more money for this, because I don't think this dude is going to win.
Well, I don't think Romney is going to win either, and I think the panic that is going on the left right now is a very familiar panic. In some ways, we're in the default position of liberalism again, which is to believe that everything horrible that could happen will happen, and it's very reminiscent, I think, to years past. But
right, this is when everybody thought that John Kerry was going to lose.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean. Well, John Kerry, obviously,
yes,
that didn't work out so well. But I do think there was a sort of panic about Obama in 2008 that was largely overstated, and I think the panic right now is largely overstated as well. My only fear is that there's a lot of money to go around. I don't know if it's an either-or choice, that the money's either going to go to Romney or it's going to go to the Senate and House races. My fear is that some of the people who weren't going to give to Romney now might decide to give to him based on this debate performance. But I can't imagine that a lot of Wall Street banks are going to shower money on Romney when basically Romney ran to the left of Obama on the banks, said he was against too big to fail, and that Dodd-Frank was a giveaway to the biggest banks. Suddenly Romney was like morphing into Elizabeth Warren when it came to banking regulations.
Right. I mean, it'll be interesting to see if what Romney said can be used by people in down ticket races. In other words, you know, if Elizabeth Warren says to Scott Brown, I think they have one more debate. Mm-hmm. Are you with, you know, where are you on this? If you've got some House races across the country, it will be interesting to put a wedge in between. I don't know. There's a lot of fodder here if the Democrats choose to use it. But based upon what we watched last night, who knows? I found the whole thing just sort of pathetic. I found it to be, I don't know, pretty pathetic. I mean, Obama just seemed tired to me. He just seemed
tired. I think he might be tired, honestly. He's been campaigning. He's president. He's got a lot of stuff to deal with in the foreign policy realm. He's worried about Turkey attacking Syria now. Right. But this is an hour and a half where he just has to look awake. I mean, even if he'd rather be at dinner with Michelle, which I'm sure he wanted to be on his 20th anniversary, I mean, he just has to suck it up for basically three more hours here in the next two debates. And I think we're going to see a much more aggressive Obama. I mean, I would be very, very surprised if we see the same performance from Obama in the second and third debate, or the same performance from Biden in the vice president.
I would like to see Joe Biden come up next week and say, hey, do you remember when the president said we're going to tweak Social Security? This is what he meant. I'm concerned because I'm not convinced. In my mind, I think President Obama, look, he's gone on record. He said multiple times in interviews, I'm upset. I don't get enough credit for willingness to cut Social Security and Medicare. And I think, you know, to his credit, in terms of having some integrity, or maybe it's just a function of not wanting something to come back to haunt him, but he refuses to say we will not cut Social Security. And he's saying,
well, I think it's bad politics. It's bad politics, but I think substantively the left is going to have to hold him accountable on this issue. I mean, I think that the left has a lot more leverage with Obama when it comes to any sort of grand bargain than they would with the Romney and Ryan.
Well, yes, I agree with that as well.
But nonetheless, I do agree with you that Obama's making some disturbing statements that are also politically just make no sense. I mean, polls show that 80 to 90% of Americans don't want Medicare or Social Security tweaked. They want the program to remain as is. They like the programs. They don't see any reason for it. And the kind of policies that Mitt Romney has embraced, that Paul Ryan has introduced, are just incredibly unpopular. And Obama shouldn't miss any opportunity to tie those around Romney's neck.
Now, he did a good job in talking about how the voucher plan will actually hurt people, even though for some reason it's okay for single-payer health insurance if you're over the age of 55 or whatever arbitrary number that they choose to pick with Romney and Ryan. But somehow single payer is not good if you're under 55. But the voucher system, we know, will destroy Medicare, even for those 55-year-olds, because it will create a death spiral as you have wealthier and healthier people getting out of that program, leaving the oldest and the sickest in Medicare, because insurance gets more expensive the older you get, et cetera, et cetera.
I thought Obama did reasonably well on Medicare and Medicaid.
Right.
I thought he could have been a little crisper, but I thought he did reasonably well. Generally speaking, I thought Obama did better in the second half of the debate than the first part of the debate. But his answers were just way too long. He needs to cut down the answer, every single answer, by at least a minute. He needs to be a lot sharper. He needs to paint Mitt Romney as a right-wing extremist, which are the policies that Romney has embraced both on foreign and domestic policy throughout this presidential campaign. He missed an opportunity to do it last night. It doesn't mean he can't do it in the subsequent debates.
All right, so let's move on from that, because I'm going to end up talking to Cliff Schechter about it tomorrow, too. And
you're going to be talking about it for weeks.
I don't want to talk about it much more after this. But, you know, you got it. You know, it's this is all going to be over very shortly. We got four more weeks.
God.
I can't wait.
Thank God.
But all right. With that said, something that seems to be eternal is the Republican desire to suppress the vote and do it by apparently any means necessary. We know there have basically been two major, it seems to me, broad, I don't know if these would be tactical or strategic goals, but one is to lock in Republican gains in the House through redistricting by taking over the state legislatures, which they have largely done, simultaneously also creating other barriers to the exercise, the, I guess, partial, it seems to me, right to vote in this country. And obviously, again, all this is focused on certain demographics, certain types of people who we know tend to vote for Democrats. Where are we at on both those accords?
Sure. Well, I mean, with redistricting, Republicans have been quite successful in locking in their gains from 2010 in the House and in the State House. So that, I think, is basically done for the next decade. They won
for
after,
the next decade, people should understand.
They won in 2010. They got to draw the maps as a result of the census. And those maps are in effect for the next decade. They've been challenged in some places. They've been blocked, for example, in Texas for discriminating against minority voters. But in most states, they have gone through. And so that's a huge consequential change that no one talks about. That's on the first thing. The second thing is that when it comes to these voter suppression laws, whether it's making it harder to register to vote or cutting back on early voting or demanding government-issued IDs to cast a ballot, there's been a very large pushback against these laws in the courts, and that's what I just wrote about this week for The Nation when I had this blog called Courts Block GOP Voter Suppression Laws, and I have some good maps from the Brennan Center for Justice illustrating this point. But basically what we saw in 2011 is states controlled by Republicans did everything they could to restrict the right to vote, primarily for young minority and low-income voters who are really one of the major cores of the Obama coalition. What's happened in 2012 is that these laws have been challenged in court and have been almost universally blocked. And the latest case was in Pennsylvania where the judge kind of copped out. He refused to block the law in full, but he basically said that the voter ID law in Pennsylvania will not be in effect for the 2012 election. It is not mandatory to show this government-issued form of ID that the state now requires, which is, I think, a very important development. And the larger story here is that Pennsylvania is one of 11 states where a voter suppression law that was passed since 2010 has been blocked by the courts.
Okay,
and
all right, wait, so
that's a pretty remarkable pushback.
So we have 11 states where these where the courts have pushed
11
back.
Laws.
11 laws. Okay.
Yeah.
So but in terms of Pennsylvania, he's not saying there's a problem with the law. He's saying that there's a problem with a sufficient time to implement the law properly. And so essentially this goes into effect the day after the election.
Well, there's going to be a trial after the election to determine whether the law will stand. I think there's a good chance that there will be a voter ID law in Pennsylvania, but it's not guaranteed.
Mm.
But it's not in effect in this election. I think the plaintiffs in the voter ID case, which included the ACLU of Pennsylvania and the Advancement Project, I think they made a tactical decision that because they were dealing with a Republican judge
mm-hmm.
and in the lower courts and a Republican Supreme Court that was tied 3-3 between Republicans and Democrats, but because you need a 4-2 court to actually overturn a law, you're basically dealing with a Republican court. They made a tactical decision that they couldn't argue about the constitutionality of voter ID laws so much as they had to just argue that not everyone was going to have ID, and therefore people were going to be disenfranchised. And I think they were largely successful. I mean, they did convince these Republican judges that people would be disenfranchised. Now, after the election, they will be able to argue at the constitutionality of voter ID laws. But first, they just needed this law to not be in effect for the 2012 election. So it was a major tactical victory. They may end up losing the larger war, but I think for this purposes, given the court we had in Pennsylvania, which was not a very favorable one, it was a relatively good decision.
Can this stay, essentially? I guess I'm not exactly sure if it's like an, if the law is being enjoined or it's a stay or whatever it is. Can this be appealed? In other words, can Pennsylvania go back to court this week and say, no, no, here's proof that we can implement it properly?
I don't see any indication that the state is going to appeal, and I don't think the state Supreme Court of Pennsylvania would be very amenable to an appeal, because the state Supreme Court seemed very skeptical that everyone would be able to get the ID they need. I mean, there's just a simple problem, as Bill Clinton would say, of arithmetic here, because the judge in the lower court who initially upheld the law said that somewhere between 1% and 9% of registered voters in Pennsylvania don't have that ID. That's anywhere from 100,000 to 500,000 people, according to conservative estimates. But only 13,000 people have gotten the new voter ID needed. So, I mean, that leaves a gap of anywhere from 90,000 to upwards of 400,000 people who are registered voters who don't have the correct ID. And I think it was for that reason that the Supreme Court and then subsequently the lower court couldn't say that no voters would be disenfranchised, because the simple math wasn't on the state of Pennsylvania's side.
And how do you get that voter ID? Do you have to go in and prove that you believe in the American dream or something like that? Is that one of the requirements?
You have to state that you believe in the Second Amendment.
measure of how big your flag lapel pin is, and that's the way.
The problem in Pennsylvania was that you had to get the ID from a Pennsylvania Department of Transportation office, and nine counties in Pennsylvania didn't even have one of those offices. In 20 other counties, it was only open one day a week. In Philadelphia, there was five Department of Transportation offices for a city with over a million people. And so it was a situation where people would show up at these offices and they'd wait 2 or 3 or 4 hours. And then they were told sometimes, you don't even have the right documents you need to be able to get this ID. And so people would leave. They would have to come back. Then they would tell them they needed some documents that the people didn't have. You need a birth certificate or a Social Security card when you didn't. And so there was just an incredible amount of confusion. And so the system was not set up to handle the ability of people to get IDs, I think largely because this was not a good faith effort from Pennsylvania to make sure that everyone would get ID. This was an attempt by Pennsylvania Republicans to essentially create and manufacture electorate that would be more in their favor by preventing a lot of young voters, minority voters, and low-income voters from being able to cast a ballot.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you, when I moved, you know, I had a Massachusetts license forever, and I don't know, 5 or 6, 7 years ago when we moved upstate, I was supposed to, well, I thought that I didn't have to. I subsequently found out that I was supposed to have switched it within 30 days. But at one point, it came around time, must have been, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago, I guess. I was going to try and get a New York State license. And I had to go down there like 12 times because I kept getting the documents wrong. I mean, I'm not a total idiot, but I think...
I mean, I don't know is that a reflection on the law or just a reflection on you?
I think it's a reflection on both. I think like literally like, you know, 2 times, maybe it's a reflection on the law. Maybe the 5 times like it took me, reflection on me. But, you know, I wasn't having to drive hours and hours. I had a vehicle. I had days where I could take off. I mean, whatever it was. And so it's not hard to see if you're being reasonable about how difficult this is. And so let me ask you this. All right. We have a Supreme Court session that is now just started, I think, 2 days ago, where the Voting Rights Act appears to be coming up in potential cases in which specifically the preclearance of certain states having to go to the Department of Justice before they can implement laws that in some way significantly could infringe upon people's ability to vote. Is maybe up before the Supreme Court. How many of those instances took place this year? And what do you think the implications of all these court cases, which essentially have said everything that we're looking at infringes upon people's rights, makes a what they call a prima facie argument, on its face argument, first blush argument, that we still need the Voting Rights Act because there are still people out there trying to disenfranchise largely minority voters.
Yeah. So what Republicans are challenging is Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, which includes parts or all of 16 states, mostly in the South, who had a history of racial discrimination in voting in 1964. And many of those states still have a very shameful record when it comes to restricting the right to vote today, given that 8 of 11 states in the former Confederacy have passed new voting restrictions since 2010. So I think in many cases, past is present in the South right now. And they're trying to say that Section 5 is unconstitutional. The problem is that states like Texas have come before either the Justice Department or the federal courts, because they have one of two options. They've come before the federal courts, and they've asked for their laws to be pre-cleared. And the federal courts have said, these laws are discriminatory. We are not going to pre-clear them. And that includes, if you look at the Texas redistricting case and the Texas voter ID case, both of which were blocked by federal courts, that includes Republican judges who have said that these laws are discriminatory. So I believe that should influence the Supreme Court justices. I think if the justices are looking at, is Section 5 still relevant, the best example of it is this past year, because it's never been more relevant if states like Florida and Texas and South Carolina are coming before federal courts and having to prove that their laws are not discriminatory, and they're losing these cases. Texas lost two big voting rights cases under Section 5. Florida lost a case about early voting under Section 5. The justices found that early voting restrictions in Florida were discriminatory against minority voters. I think there's a very good chance South Carolina is going to lose its case as well. So this evidence should influence the Supreme Court, because Section 5 is a very important tool, and states are still passing voter suppression laws. They passed more voter suppression laws since the 2010 election than they had since the Jim Crow era. And so I believe that this challenge to Section 5 is critically important, and if the Supreme Court was to gut Section 5 or to overturn it altogether, it would really be an absolutely horrible day for voting rights. I hope it doesn't come to that, though. There's a good chance that this case is going to be heard not this fall, in the spring, though, so I think there's some time to work all of this out.
Is there any has there been any Section 5 cases that have ruled in favor of the state?
There have been cases
recently,
where the Department of Justice has pre-cleared laws.
Well,
that have
yeah,
not
but
been,
that, so, yeah, okay.
But there has not been a case before federal court where Republicans have won under Section 5, no. There's been three challenges thus far that have been ruled on under Section 5 by the federal courts, two in Texas, one in Florida, and Republicans have lost all of those cases.
So the only real challenge that somebody could bring, it seems to me, to the Supreme Court would be based upon the constitutionality of it, right? And because you can't talk about the efficacy of it or that there's been any harm done per se, because you can't argue that the courts have been somehow harmed us, right? I mean,
no, that's what they're arguing. They are arguing about the constitutionality of it. There is a case in Alabama. What Alabama did is there was a small county, Shelby County, Alabama. They had one black city commissioner, and he represented a district that was largely African American. They redrew those lines without federal approval. Alabama is subject to Section 5. They redrew those lines without federal approval, and they reduced his district from a 70% minority voting district to a 22% minority voting district. And that African American city council member was subsequently defeated in his new nearly all-white district. And the Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act says very clearly you can't pass a voting change that makes it harder for minority citizens to either cast a ballot or to elect their candidate of choice. And when you reduce a district from 70% to 22% African-American, that is clearly what you are doing. And so the Department of Justice not only said we refuse to clear this, but they said you're in violation of Section 5. That case has been challenged. It's been challenged in the lower courts, both in district court and the Court of Appeals. Alabama has lost both of those cases, but they're nonetheless now appealing to the Supreme Court, and attorney generals in six Republican states are supporting this. This, to me, seems like a slam dunk case. Alabama should absolutely lose this case, but you never know what the five conservative justices in the court are going to do.
Are we going to see people go to sleep again after this? I mean, it seems to me that after 2000, I thought we would see a lot more activity in terms of making sure that our laws to vote, making sure that people weren't accidentally purged, making sure you know, would have been corrected, right? I mean, I think you know, I seem to remember that you have written specifically that you can forget the recount, you can forget Ralph Nader, you can forget anything you want to forget in Florida. If you remember that there were some 15,000 people scrubbed from the rolls who tried to vote, who couldn't vote, specifically inappropriately, and there's every reason to believe from their demographic breakdown that they would have certainly more than made up the hundreds of votes that Al Gore lost by.
Well, absolutely. There was 12,000 registered voters who were wrongly labeled as felons in Florida and prevented from voting. 41% of them were African Americans. Well, African Americans supported Al Gore over George Bush by 80-something points. And so it's not hard to imagine that even if a fraction of those purged voters had been able to cast a ballot, that would have been enough to make up the margin that George W. Bush had over Al Gore, those 537 votes. So, I mean, you can even take the Supreme Court out of it and say that Al Gore should have won the election, and that voter purge cost him the election. So the idea that Florida would attempt a voter purge like this again in 2012 is really shocking to me. And luckily, it's largely been stalled, and the local election supervisors have refused to implement it. But it's nonetheless disturbing that Florida would not only do that, but take a series of other steps to restrict the right to vote, including cutting back on voter registration drives, cutting back on early voting, and disenfranchising ex-felons. I do think that I was just talking to a big voting rights activist this morning about this, and she told me there's been a rejuvenation of the voting rights movement because of all these voter suppression laws that have been passed, and that's one benefit of all these laws passed, that people are more aware of this. But I totally agree with you that, you know, if Obama wins the election, that doesn't certainly make all these laws right. And it doesn't certainly mean that we just have to go to sleep in 2013. I think we should fully expect that Republicans in states that have Republican legislatures and Republican governors are going to try to pass these laws in 2013 and 2014. They might be a little more careful about the laws. They might be a little looser in implementing them so as to avoid court challenges. But I think we have to remain as vigilant after the election as we've been in the last year or two.
Ari, great parting words. As always, a pleasure to spend some time with you.
Sam, the pleasure is always mine.
Well, I know. But it's also mine, too. It's both of ours.
See you later, my friend. Shalom.
Shalom. There you go. We just gave the secret code word, ladies and gentlemen. Bye, Ari. Ari Berman, ladies and gentlemen. And now what we will do, a little bit of house cleaning on, well, you know what? Forget it. No house cleaning. There was something I wanted to talk about, and I can't remember what it is. It's one of those days, folks. I'm super, super exhausted. Please, if you have the opportunity, become a Majority Report member. Oh, and I should also tell you that today's program, am I right? Today's program is brought to you by, no, it's not. That will be later. Nice try, Michael. Folks, it is your membership that supports this program. And you can become a member at majority.fm. Look, it is, the economy is not getting, it's not really getting significantly better. And we hear these conversations by guys like Jim Lehrer, who the question is how much are we going to cut? How much more are we going to cut? And these cuts are going to come out of Social Security. They're going to come out of Medicare. They're coming out of the social safety net. And frankly, we get a decent amount of members every week that write in, sadly, and say, just can't afford it anymore. And sometimes I feel uncomfortable with the fact that they have waited so long to cancel their membership. And, you know, like I've said in the past, I work out a deal with everybody who cannot afford the membership but wants it. And if you're one of those people, email me at majorityreporters@gmail.com. But so we need to replenish some of these members and to grow the membership base. And so if you can afford to, whether you want the extra 50 minutes a day or not, or the occasional day where we don't put up a free show and we just put up a member archive show, become a member today. Support the program for yourself and for others, for your children, your puppies, small kittens. You don't want the corporate media to be the only media, which means that you get to step up. All right, folks, in the better half of the program, we will not be talking about the debate. We'll be talking about Simpson Bowles, or Bowles Simpson. And we'll be talking about Paul Ryan's 30% video that came out. And hopefully we're trying to track down some people to talk about both what's going on with the Keystone Pipeline, just some unbelievable brutality by the cops. I mean, full on, to the point where I just don't understand. I just don't understand how these people are not being locked up. And I'm talking about the cops in this situation. There is no excuse to tase someone or spray pepper spray in them because they've chained themselves to a piece of machinery. You're under no threat in that situation. It really is astonishing. All right, we're going to take a break. 646-257-3920. The IM is Majority FM. You can support this show in other ways. If you have Amazon, you buy junk through Amazon, buy it through our link. You can go to majority.fm/support the show. Just click on it. Buy your stuff through there. And we get a little kickback. Also, of course, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, organic, chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. You can buy the Majority Report blend. See you in the better half.